Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Squares the Cube. We are a multi-dimensional podcast where we discuss and ramble a little bit about Magic the Gathering Cube. I'm Jesse, your host for the week, and I am joined by two lovely and over-talented individuals. My co-host, Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Trying to butter me up here today. I love it. I feel very lovely and very co-hosty today, I guess.
Call you my little biscuit. And I also have another co-host in Ryan. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing freaking fantastic, Jesse. Thank you for having us as always, and thank you for hosting, and happy Tuesday!
Happy Tuesday! Any Tuesday's happy, that's not a Monday.
But I love Mondays too!
Oh, you would. Okay, so it's been a week since we've talked. How many cubes have we gotten in, guys? Alex, you got to cube much?
Oh boy, it's been a busy cube week for me this week. Did an event with a brand new store this week, actually, that was a lot of fun. We were fortunate enough to do an event with Board Bard Games off of Stark Street and 76th, I believe, here in the Portland area. They are just opening up and starting up their Magic community, and so they very kindly welcomed us to their Friday night event to kind of get some F&M going. So I had both my Pauper Cube and my Unpowered Vintage Cube down there, and we did a draft of that on Friday, which is a lot of fun. We had 14 people show up, too. And then this past Monday, I guess last night, we also had the opportunity to do a draft of Jesse's Cube at Wayward City Games up in Vancouver. So it's been a very busy week of Cube drafting for me.
Love it, love it. Well, you've given away part of my story, but I definitely...
Sorry about that.
I definitely could have cubed more. I was last week saying I was cubing my brains out, and this week it was only maybe five or six times, which for some people may sound like a lot, but that's a good 100 less than I get in some weeks. Ryan, are you keeping up? How many times did you cube this week?
I got a lot of vintage cubes in. I got 8 or 9 down with 2 or 3 trophies to follow. So I ended with a total of 8 trophies for this measly attempt this season. And in the draft world, I'm not going to lie, I ran out of play points, which means all my winnings went technically negative. So I had 2 3-0s for sure, or possibly 3, and then the rest where I felt like there's a lot of 1-2s and then a lot of 0-3s. But as it was coming toward the end of the season, I was just trying a bit of variety in decks and then a lot of playability in cards that I don't have in my cubes. So I was just trying some newer synergies or things that definitely didn't pan out.
Oh, no, I love using other people's cubes as a way to play test my own. It's the laziest way to play test something for my cube.
Right? It's so easy that way. And I was unfortunately still stuck into ice up until Sunday, and I missed the Stark's Street's opening game. I apologize. But having all that time at home just led for a lot of Magic Online cubes. And now the Arena Cube's open, which I cannot wait to try.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, do any of you have intentions to get on Arena? It sounds like you do. Ryan, Alex, you going to try out Arena Cube?
I would love to. This week is... We've been talking, the weather here in Portland has just been insane, and that's made a lot of work for me here this week. So I'd love to play some Arena Cube this week. I'd also hopefully like to hit up the Vintage Cube is still around through the 27th or 29th, I believe. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Four or five more days. I would love to hopefully get a couple of more of those under my belt, as I have not been doing any online cubing. But yeah, both the Arena Cube and MTGO, I hope to get some cubing in this week.
Nice, nice. Looking, I see December 20 through January 3rd for that event. Where's the schedule for when it ends now?
I mean,
I'm not sure when this is closing right now.
If you're feeling gambly, which I am always down to gamble, there is that 64 man single elimination version. We can. I'm always down to jam that.
Have you been playing any of those, Brian?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Absolutely, have not made one top 8.
he likes trophies more than money, but you know you got to win those for that to be a good trade.
Right, it's not the same.
All right, well, we have a few interesting things to talk about this week. One of the things that was brought to our attention that I think Alex and I are both pretty excited about is a new spoiler for a pretty lady who doesn't let people block. And as much as I like hitting people in the face with my creatures, I'm pretty okay with this ability. Alex, you want to tell us a little bit about this headliner, Scarlet?
Yeah, it's a brand new card. I think from the new Clue version of Magic that they're going to be doing here with the Murderous at Karlov Manor. So it's going to be a standalone supplementary product. But Headline Scarlet is a creature for 3 colorless and a red legendary creature, human warlock, has haste. It's a 3/3. And it reads, whenever she enters the battlefield, creatures target player controls can't block this turn. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library face down. You may look and play that card this turn. Red has kind of always had a theme of being able to cast cards from exile. But I feel like, especially in the last couple of years, we have gotten so many cards in the same vein. Things like Lelia of the Bladeforged is something that's been a very strong card in red. We've seen some weaker versions of that in things like Conspiracy Theorist from Strixhaven, even Inti here in Lost Caverns of Ixalan, just a lot of cards in red that do this similar feature. And I'm interested to be looking to see if there's going to be more ways that we can tie that together across the red color, especially in games that are a little bit more powerful or power-oriented. So this is a card that definitely has my attention. What do you guys think about this card?
Ryan?
I think this card is amazing. Being 3 colorless and a single red, right? It's not up there with Hellrider, but being able to have an entire team not block is bonkers. And then having the upside of casting spells from exile on your upkeep, I think this card is definitely up there for debate. Easily can replace any of the Purphoruses of the Forges or strategies like that in cubes. I haven't figured what 4-drop it will replace in mine yet, but I will definitely be working on it. Unfortunately, it might be time for Flame Time Kavu to exit. Ooh. We shall see.
Ooh.
Yeah, see, I still have a slightly more boomer pick in mind than you do, in that I still play Avalanche Rider. And Headliner might spell the end for my favorite little Echo land destruction creature.
I do love me some Avalanche Riding.
I will say, I think the thing I'm most interested in with cards like this, though, is as they keep printing these abilities and more saturation, and not just saturation, but also attaching this play from exile ability to better cards. Because as you said, we've been able to do it for a long time. It's a thing a lot of red cards and even some blue or Dremir cards have done. They're not always stapled to the best cards. You know, not every card can be Hostage Taker. Not every card can be Ragavan. They're starting to attach them to frequently, more and more frequently, to very, very good cards. And I'm hoping that we get more things like, you know, your delayed Blast Fireball, that actually care about being cast from exile, to make this a much more interesting little sub-build, little sub-R&D portion of red. Because right now, I think it's the only one we have.
Well, and that was the card I was trying to think of. There we go. What we were talking about in the pre-show here before we started getting recording, I knew there was a card. And yeah, it's Delayed Fireball is the card that it's like more of these type effects that we have, the more useful that potentially can be. And awesome. Thank you, Jesse. I appreciate that. That's exactly the card I couldn't think of earlier.
Yeah, no problem.
That ties this all together. But yeah, I'm excited for this thing. I think it's going to be fun to try this out.
Right. And for reference, my friends, Delayed Blast Fireball is a red one instant spell that is a one-sided pyroclasm that also hits your opponent. However, it has an additional text and ability in that it has foretell for 4 red. And if this spell was cast from exile, it does 5 damage to each opponent and each creature they control instead. So on the face of it, you know, it's a pretty decent, like, wildfire-ish equivalent that's one-sided. However, the wording is not worded in such a way that it says it needs to be foretold to trigger this 5 damage. It just needs to be cast from exile. So you flip this card off your opponent's deck with Ragavan, or flip it off your own with Inti, Headliner Scarlet, you know, your Lelias, your
Chandra
Torch of Defiances, your Questing Druids. A bunch of excellent cube cards nowadays are exiling cards and then you play them. So you get to one side wildfire your opponent for 3 mana or no mana, depending on what exiles it. But I don't think we have anything else in this vein just yet. And I'm really hopeful they design around it a little bit more.
It definitely it almost seems like it's going to be Red's new niche, right? I think, Alex, you had referenced that as well, like hopefully casting cards from exile moving forward.
Yeah, I know that they've been trying to find unique ways to make the colors, the way that each color draws, you know, blue and green typically get to just straight up draw a card. And they've been trying to find a lot of different ways to make white do stuff as well. That's not just straight draw a card. It's more, how do we either be able to recast things or do things? And reds, you know, obviously the either rummage draw or this play from exile thing definitely seems to be their version of red for that. And having the payoff cards to be able to go along with the enablers, I think would be awesome. So yeah, more delayed blast fireballs, I think would be fantastic for Magic as a whole.
Right. Yeah, I think that would be an interesting thing to design around. Do we have any other thoughts on Headliner Scarlet? No?
Nope, negative. I think we're good.
Well, I think I want to talk about another card from Lost Caverns of Ixalan that has been making a bunch of noise in Legacy, and in some CEDH lists I've seen it's made goblins appear much more like the combo decks, combo goblin grenade decks of yore than the dude-based creature decks they used to be. In Broadside Bombardiers, this card is a 2 generic, 1 red goblin pirate menace haster 2/2 with boast. Sacrifice another creature or artifact. Broadside Bombardiers deals damage equal to 2 plus the sacrifice permanent's mana value to any target. This can be a lot of damage really easily. And in queue where you can sneak in very, very large things, this could be a really insane inclusion in some sneak attack type builds, reanimate type builds, where you hit them with the thing, then throw the thing at their head with Broadside Bombardiers. And also just works really well in an aggro deck where you top out at 4, hit them with your Hasting Hellrider, and throw it at their head for 6. I think this card is extremely strong. Alex, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think this thing is fantastic in what it does. Again, has menace and haste, and so does what red wants to do sometimes, which is go quick. So it kind of plays in multiple lanes, as well as just, like you said, the sneak attack style decks, the reanimate style decks. Somebody correct me here. I was trying to think. Obviously, I don't believe there's going to be a window to flash something in to do this, because sacrificing another creature, just not going to be a window to do that. So not something that specifically pairs with that in queue.
It does.
Oh, it does? Is there a window there I'm not thinking about?
Well, you don't. It's not an attack trigger. Boast is just a state-based trigger that says if you have attacked, this ability may be activated once this turn. Uh-huh. So his ability is just an ability. You could attack, flash in anything, and sacrifice it at any point you wanted to.
So to suddenly make a flash, both a fling as well as, you know, whatever ETB effect you're getting off something like, say, an Atroxa, I mean, that just sounds absolutely, you know, nutty and kind of Christmas landy. But I think this card definitely has a lot of ways that it interacts with other things that are already happening in Cube, and it has good keywords that are going to make it relevant for just the red color in general.
Oh, I guess maybe I don't know Flash well enough, but just reading Flash, I think I'm wrong. The fact that you can activate his ability doesn't seem to be relevant. I'm reading here that no player will get priority between the creature entering the battlefield and being sacrificed on Flash's rulings.
Okay, that's what I thought. I didn't think that there was a time window there, but even still, I mean, like you're saying, there's still a lot of other ways that you can take this to really good effect with like you said, sneak attack, or just other, even through the breach would be, you know, in red itself is another way to do this.
Oh yeah, one Tinker also. I mean, anything that cheats in just these large things that can have high impact. You sneak in a triplicate Titan or Tinker in a triplicate Titan, throw it at their face for 11, get 3/3s. Ow.
Win the game next turn.
I mean, if you didn't already, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, gross.
This wouldn't be too bad with a Necromancy too, even cast as an instant, correct?
That one, I think there is a time window, because that should be a delayed trigger.
Because it's end of turn versus instantaneously.
Yeah, I mean, any of those, I think any of those effects that say, like, when this dies, sacrifice the creature, there's going to be a trigger that is created and you're able to respond to. Flash, I definitely was not up to rulings on that one. I haven't thought about that card since it got banned in CEDH. It's only recently I've been playing with it in Power Cube again that I'm like, oh, I need to remember how this card works.
Sure, kind of have to bring all ourselves back up to speed on things when they suddenly show back up in the cube.
Yeah. I think this card definitely going to find a home in a lot of different power levels of cube for sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong, this is not in the newest version of the MTGO cube, correct? This is not currently online. I don't remember seeing this on the list, if anybody
I can check Cube Cobra real quick. I already have it open the Moto Cube and see, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
Let me see if it's.
I know that there has been chat in the Cube community about this guy, but I don't think he's actually in or currently in the list for the MTGO Cube.
Gotcha. Moto Vintage Cube open.
No, list. This is not making onto the Vintage Cube. In fact, if I'm not mistaken,
no, you're fine.
Didn't make it onto Wolf. I think it's only made it on Wolf's Cube. As well as one others. The one thing I do is I keep misreading this card. I've asked Jesse this in this previous chat, that I was assuming it was based on the power, but this card, the more and more I read it, it gives more and more power. This is incredible. I think I have to try this immediately in our cube.
Yeah, mana value is a much more abusable mechanic than power in most cubes. I mean, I think in some cubes that are on like Berserk Shenanigans, it could be real frightening if it was power. But I think most cubes abuse large mana costs more than they do large powers.
I think
as it's written is much scarier.
And just maybe this falls into the Goblin Wilder Magic Christmas land where you're doing something awesome in mono red.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So there's lots of interactions and crossover with other things, like even with its own color, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Exciting card for sure. We have any other cards to talk about? I think we had a cute dinosaur that Ryan was interested in talking about.
Yeah. We have
Endora Jurassico Raptor.
Yes. So this son of a gun, I think, has a lot of flavor and probably a lot of playability, and I was just curious on getting some other people's opinions. I did go ahead and place an order for this because I think this has a place to fit someplace. And Jesse, I think it's, I apologize, it's in the correct name is Endoraptor, yep. The perfect hybrid.
I like your name better.
Right? Just the thing from Jurassic World. This is a Secret Lair spinoff or a collaboration with the Universes Beyond, some special version of it. But it is a 3-1 for a single colorless, a red, and a hybrid of either black or green. It has Bloodthirst X, and it has Menace, and it has Enrage. And when it's enraged and dealt damage, it will then choose an opponent at random and deal that much damage equal to its power, unless they sacrifice a non-token creature. A 3-1 for 3 by itself is pretty amazing. Fix into the black-red decks. I think it has a lot of flavor. The Bloodthirst is just icing on top of the cake. And then Menace plus Enrage just seems incredibly overpowered. What are your guys' thoughts?
I think specifically it being in that color pairing is really good. I don't know how many cubes are on Bloodbraid Elf anymore, but just the old-school Jund of, you know, Terminate, Abrupt Decay, kill all your stuff, Thought Seize your answer, provide you with Raptor to the face is going to be very, very imposing. Whereas if you aren't in these like removal heavy shells, they can just sacrifice a creature to the Enrage, which isn't like the, you know, end of the world. You still got them to sack a creature. But at that point, he's nowhere near as scary as the insane amount of damage it could hit you in the face for. So you definitely want to be clearing the board down to where they only have the one blocker they have to block with. And just kind of forced the damage through. I don't know. The card is interesting. It also is kind of frightening that it just scales into forever because of the Bloodthirst X. Alex, you have any thoughts on this card?
No, I think you guys have said a lot of good stuff about it. I have some thoughts about the fact that, again, this is another card that seems to be designed and created for Commander specifically. So again, we're seeing, and I think this is going to lead into the conversation we're looking to talk about today, Commander cards popping their way into Cube just because of the powerful abilities that are designed to be played with multiple people, which I think is going to become relevant later. But that's really the only other thing I can add to that. I think you guys have said a lot of great stuff about this card already.
Yeah, no, I think you're not wrong. This card is using a set of wording that is on a couple other cards that have made their ways in the cube to choose an opponent at random. Things like Chaos Defiler, which have become extremely stapled to almost every Rakdos pie in any power cube. The randomness is kind of gone when you only have one opponent, which just makes these abilities that are supposed to have an aspect of randomness to balance their power level not so balanced. So segueing perfectly, we were going to talk a little bit about power creep this week. And not to say that, you know, the Cube community is unfamiliar with power creep, because, you know, we watched as Callblade became a thing because Jace was a world apart from the other planeswalkers at the time. You know, there's been a time or two where we've experienced some power jumps. But I'm posing that I think this is a jump, kind of a league above the other jumps even. We have some cards that are putting Power 9 to shame in a lot of cases. I'm definitely in a place in Cube right now where I'm passing some power for cards like Minskin Boo or Fourth Earlingus. So just general thoughts on power creep. Do you feel like it's becoming a problem, Alex?
I definitely... again, the question is, I don't know if it's a problem or not. It's just more, it's obviously something that's happening more. We're seeing, I think, some bigger jumps on occasion where if you're willing to sit here and say that potentially you're willing to pick these cards over power, are there specific, you know, you name Minskin Boo, and I'm sure we'll name some other cards here. Are there specific pieces of power that you're starting to feel are falling below these cards to start with here before we start naming the new power creep cards themselves? Or what are your thoughts on that, to kind of throw that back to you a little bit?
Personally, no, there's not a specific one. I think I said as much to you at the Cube event yesterday, where there are probably 2 to 3 cards that I'm taking over every one of the Power 9 and Soul Ring in Cube right now if I actually want to win.
What are those cards you're taking? Yeah, let's name those. I'm curious. Yeah, start the conversation there.
My 3 picks are already mentioned, 2 of them in Fourth Earlingus and Minskin Boo. The third one is White Plume Adventurer. This card is not okay. Initiative has already taken over a couple formats. It's, last I heard, the best deck in Vintage. And it's one of the most powerful things you can do early. God forbid you can combine it with any of the power or a mana dark and do it on turns 1 or 2 before your opponent can present any sort of creature to take it from you. And in a lot of cubes, it's the only one that gives initiative, if not 1 of 2. Like, some people are on the Undermountain Adventure in green. A couple people are playing the other 4-mana white one. But unless they can accelerate it out, you're already 2, 3, 4 steps into the initiative by the time you get there. And have generated so much value that unless your opponent combos off and just wins outright, which nobody can stop opponents from splinter twinning you when you're sitting there playing white creatures or planeswalkers instead of counterspells. But short of getting comboed out, you're not losing that game very often. You've already generated enough value that you're going to win. Whereas if I take a Black Lotus and cheat, insert almost any card into play, I still just fold to insert removal here. It's the old dies to Doomblade argument, except it doesn't work on White Bloom because you still have the initiative and your opponent still loses, which is awkward.
Well, I've got a couple thoughts on that too, but before I jump back in again, Ryan, do you have opening thoughts about these cards, the Power 9, anything else that you want to add before I start asking some questions about that?
I definitely do. So I was actually thinking, and I was going to bring this up earlier in our little quick chat before the podcast, was there are probably about 12 to 15 cards that I would pick before targeting Minskin Boo, Fourth Earlingus, or White Plume Adventurer. Now, listen, the only, and I won't jump into it, Alex, because I know that you probably have some things to say on it too. Like, I could see you passing on Dual Lands for some of those, but Underground Sea, Tundras, or especially if you're pretty far into like your deck construction, I don't think I'd be willing to ever pass on Ring, Moxes, possibly even Library. And I know, Alex, you have a pretty big distaste for that one as well.
I do.
I'll play Library in mono green decks, right? If you get that thing to trigger 2 or 3 times, you can catch up. Of course, it's most of the time always behind. But yeah, in short, while the power creep has gone up a lot in Magic, I don't think when we are comparing Power 9 to those cards that we're quite there yet. I'm not saying that we're not approaching it, especially with the amount of cards that Magic and Wizards is just constantly pushing out from both Universes Beyond, some weird tie into other worlds, or just what, Modern Horizons 3, etc. So I'm not quite there. I do think it's really sad that, you know, we see cards that were once amazing be completely outclassed by commons and uncommons. But that's just the game. Do I think it's happening too quickly? Yes. And my wallet would like it to slow down.
Alex, take it away.
Well, yeah, I mean, first off, I think this is interesting because there's definitely two different players here with two different pick value lists, which that I think is another interesting question within itself, too. But when you were naming a number of these cards with Minsk and Boo, Fourth Urlingus, White Plume Adventurer, a couple things that I noticed about these cards is that they all share the common theme that they were not introduced into Magic through either premium Magic sets through Standard. All of these cards are either cards that were designed for multiplayer Magic or came in via Commander products. Fourth Urlingus was obviously a Commander card with the Lord of the Rings set that recently came out here this year. White Plume Adventure and Minsk and Boo both came from the Commander Legends Baldur's Gate set that we had last summer. So a lot of these cards that are suddenly making these big power splashes in Cube were really designed for multiplayer Magic, you know, mine with things like Commander and whatnot, which I think leads to the point you were making earlier, Jesse, where you're saying, like, you feel that these cards come down and they generate so much value when they hit the board. And that's probably because we're designing this with three opponents in mind, right? Mm-hmm. That if this card does get Doomblained or that this Planeswalker does get destroyed, that, oh, by the way, you know, obviously there's a way to actually get Minsk and Boo off before the hamster comes down. But potentially it leaves behind the hamster, right? That you still get an element of something even if the card is answered. In the case of Fourth Urlingus, you're still the monarch, right? That there's still this value piece there that you can't one for one answer these cards. So does this become a question then of when we're looking at power creep? Is that are we seeing these new cards designed for four player Magic and we're just not seeing the same level of answers designed for four, you know, player Magic coming out alongside them that we're not getting for Cube? Is that the fact that these are multiplayer Magic cards, or do we also need to see some multiplayer Magic answers to make them less power creepy in Cube? I mean, what do people think about that? The fact of where these cards are coming from, and are we missing part of the equation when it comes to multiplayer Magic?
That's an interesting proposition. I do think that it's hard to design that in such a way that it wouldn't break Commander, and they're not going to, I don't think Wizards is ever going to have any of the R&D people care about Cube. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty that play and care about it as a format, but more that they're not going to design their cards for them, for the format. I mean, they'd already given up on Legacy years ago, and that's our CEDH Legacy are our closest analogs. I don't think we're going to get them giving a damn about Cube, which is fine. But it does maybe make me want to rephrase the power creep thing, because it's maybe not fair to accuse R&D of power creeping 1v1 Magic when they're not designing the cards to be played in 1v1. So maybe the question then is posed to the Cube community if we should be trying to avoid playing these multiplayer cards in 1v1 Cubes. Ryan, you have any thoughts?
Well, as we were speaking that, I was just doing some quick light research on Cube Cobra, and if we were going that route, I mean, team, I think we're talking about a massive change in power creep in our cubes. I don't think I would be on board with this. I do understand where you guys are coming from. I am just hyper-focused on power and just insane power cards, powerful cards. But if we're talking about this in an open manner, removing that and just having Magic cards that have been introduced through regular Magic sets probably would mean it'd be a change in Cube that would be a little bit more welcoming, inviting, right? I don't think Monarch was introduced in any kind of Magic set, right? Conspiracy cards are all over our cubes as well. So I think there would be a significant cut of cards from multiple colors if we did pull this concept from us.
Well, and I'm not necessarily suggesting that player, you know, obviously a Cube curator can pick from the vast library of Magic cards that exist to decide what they want to run or not run in their cube, right? So if you want to have that design restriction where you don't want to have cards that were designed for multiplayer Magic, you can certainly do that in your cube design. And even between the three of us, we all approach cube design in different ways. And that's not necessarily, I think, what I'm suggesting, that we can't play these cards or that we shouldn't play these cards. And you're right. I mean, everything from Palace Jailer to you know, all these other, I mean, all the mono cards that make their way into Cube as well. I mean, this has been happening for a while now, but just with the influx of Commander design in Magic in general, and the fact that we're seeing so many more products designed for Commander. I mean, we're talking about, or Jesse, you've been indicating the fact that there's been, it feels like the power creep has gotten even worse in the last year. And all I'm suggesting potentially is there a through line that we're seeing these cards like the Raptor we were talking about in the earlier card discussion as well, where it says things where it's specifically designed for multiple players, multiple opponents in mind, and when we move these cards into one-on-one Magic, then suddenly we have this immense power creep because there aren't two other players to help you answer this thing off the board, right? Do we potentially need to see, do we feel like the power creep is so incredibly larger at the moment because we're not getting answers for 1v1 Magic at the same rate that we're also getting these cards that are designed for four-player value? If we were getting more answers, would we feel like there's potentially as much power creep right now is kind of what I was suggesting.
I guess I wasn't very clear, and I don't think that that's the thing we can do. I don't think there even is a way to design that. If you have an idea for how to make destroy target creature be a multiplayer card, aside from just cast this, destroy a creature from each opponent or something, I don't know how that would make Commander answers better, but it wouldn't help Cube at all because we still only have one opponent and one creature to choose from.
Well, when we're talking about like this value that it leaves behind, I mean, again, like you said, I don't think R&D is ever designing anything for Cube specifically, and that's not what I'm implying, but we have a lot of interesting things like the Initiative and the Monarch that are these game tracking game state mechanics. Obviously, if something that, you know, we've got lots of abilities that say either counter, target, triggered, or activated ability. I mean, is it potentially time for us to see something like a card that says, like, stop, you know, active game state of Magic, like counter the Monarch? You know, do we need a card that says, you know, stop the Monarch from existing or stop the dungeon from existing? I mean, is the problem that we're trying to create these interesting ways to play four-player Magic, but we don't actually have any ways to turn these things off? I mean, once they start, their value that's been accrued from a lot of these very powerful cards that just never goes away during the game. I mean, it's a constant element in the game for the rest of the game. I mean, is that the problem in itself with a lot of these cards?
Okay, so I guess I misunderstood what you meant. You mean more direct answers to the mechanics themselves? So like them designing a keyword like Regicide, which just when it triggers, no one is the Monarch anymore?
Something. That's what I'm saying is like, you know, right, because I mean, and the more of these things that they keep creating, the dungeons, the side games, the stuff like that, it could be a keyword mechanic and affect all of them in some way, shape, or form, or just, you know, and said game elements. I mean, the day-night cycle, there's a lot of cards that some cubers are definitely willing to put in their cubes, but if your stowaway gets killed early on in the game, you're still tracking the day-night mechanic for the whole rest of the bloody game, even if that stowaway is destroyed, right?
It's also, I've been blown out by it being night when it was like I didn't realize it was night. Because someone plays a creature later on that just comes in transformed. I'm like, oh, that's good.
I mean, exactly. That's something that we have to decide, like I was saying earlier, as cube designers, right? Like, if we want to put these cards in our cube, if we don't want to put these cubes in our cube, you know, cards in our cube, we get to control the environment. But especially like when it comes to Ryan, where you're curating like just the most powerful cards of Magic in your list, Ryan, do you start to feel that like there's just too many things to track, there's too many things going on, and these cards are so powerful just because of the number of new game states and things we now have to track and manipulate? I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Ryan?
This is a rather eye-opening conversation, because discussing these as open Commander cards, etc., it's definitely like shifting my position on it in some ways. However, I want to come back to you, Alex, for 2 seconds.
Sure.
In short, I think if they printed more cards to counteract these cards, it would be only in the EDH or that kind of community. And then the power creep of those cards to counter the already good cards would then just, I think it would just be an never-ending cycle of power creep answering power creep.
Well, we kind of have that in Magic in general. I mean, think of like the early, like, you know, or I say early, but like 2008, 2010, you know, era where suddenly we get cards like Path to Exile as like a new answer of like Swords. And, you know, there was an era of Magic there with blue-white control and Standard where the answers were just as good, if not better, than the threats. And playing something like the blue-white control deck was the smart thing to play because the answers were better than threats. And since that time period, Wizards design has definitely had an aversion to making answers better than threats. Is that a problem? I mean, the fact that we're not seeing answers that can keep up with threats. I think that's kind of more where I'm going. And I apologize. I feel like I'm starting to kind of hijack this conversation a little bit. But that's kind of what I'm thinking about. These commander cards, we're talking about how much value they generate and leave behind. I mean, and there's just zero way to answer that value, right, is really the problem that I see when I look at a lot of these cards, if the power creep itself is a problem, right?
Right.
I think one of the things they've been trying to do, and I don't even necessarily think they're doing a poor job, the answers have gotten better in that they're so hyper-efficient now.
Versatile. You know, they're still versatile, too, right?
Yeah, they're very versatile. Often, like, Molten Collapse has multiple modes. You end up with cards like, you know, Fatal Push was the OG, but, like, it's just gotten better because now there's more in that same slot that do something similar that just kill creatures all the way up to 5 and 6 CMC, depending on, you know, the size of them. You have cards like Cut Down and such that just kill. Doesn't really matter how big the cost is, so long as it happens to be a big effect, small power and toughness creature, you can take it out. They're very efficient, but I don't know that. Yeah, like you said, there's nothing for answering Initiative or Monarch.
Well, sure. Those were all wonderful, full answers that you just suggested there, right? There are things that will kill creatures, but do any of those feel like they're very effective against the three cards you named at first in either Minsk and Boo, you know, White Plume Adventure, or Fourth? I mean, do those do what you want them to do against those cards?
I mean, admittedly, Minsk and Boo is in a weird place where, of the three, it's the weakest to me, which is insane to say because that card is totally unbalanced. But it does, like you said, that one actually does just die to Doomblade, and then they paid 4 mana for a 1/1, right? Insert Soldier's Edict, Hero's Downfall, Swift End, etc., 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 Generous Gift, Peace Within, whatever. You can clear the thing and them not be making a 4/4 Hasting Trampling Hamster that draws 4 cards next turn. That's so many words. Whereas the other two, I don't know what you're supposed to do about Fourth except lose or counter it. Obviously, if you're so far ahead that you just block all the 2/2s, but at that point, very few things are saving you short of a board wipe or an instant win combo anyway. But at anywhere near parity, or if they're even an increment ahead, Fourth and White Plume just bury you. And no, I don't think there is a removal spell that really, I guess there's one. We just talked about it, actually. I didn't think about how good Delayed Blast Fireball is against Fourth. Mm-hmm. That's mighty specific, but boy, is it good.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, we may need specific answers against specific cards, right? In kind of a rock, sure, paper, scissors. Yeah, stealth format. And sorry, Ryan, I cut you off earlier. I mean, did you have more to say about that subject where we were back there a second ago?
No, it's okay. The last thing I would say is the only thing we could see from a magic level, right, is more spell pierces or counter spells that were lower mana cost. But Wizards come out. Specifically say it's such an unfun format and uninviting to the game that they'll probably never do that.
Right.
So, well,
if we're not going to get the counter spells like that, then does stuff like Hand Disruption become even more valuable and just need to play a bigger role in Cube, where if like you said, Counterspell is obviously a way to stop any of these cards. If it was to be countered, then that extra value is not generated. Another way would be is if you can take that card out of a player's hand before they can cast it, then again, the value is not generated. And so do we need to potentially, as Cube designers, put a greater influence on hand hate cards in our Cube over... as the answer, I mean, is that potentially one of the things that we need to see more of to balance these power creep cards out a little bit?
I do think they would be very, very good. I'm currently in a place where I just moved off of Duress and to Disguise because the spells you take with Duress do not feel as good as the ones I can hit with Disguise. Like, the things I want to take with Duress are mostly Planeswalkers anyway, except for Fourth. Mm-hmm. And then Despise hits all the insane creatures too, that I normally have to just stare at with my Duress and be depressed.
Fair.
So I was on a place where I kept casting Duress and like taking their time walk, and I'm like, okay, you sadly still have a Minskin Boo, and I can't win. whereas if like I had a Despise, sick, sure. I could leave them their Explorer and take the card that kills me. That's just been my experience anyway. Obviously, that's anecdotal. Sure. This is all get out, but definitely considering just moving up to more. Because I only have Despise, Inquisition, Thoughtseize, and Collective Brutality, I believe, are the only ones in my list. And I don't play any of the, like, reusable ones or the creatures or enchantments that lets you do it on recursion. I don't play any of the, like, blind naming ones that you can play after you know what their hand is, like the Cabals.
Right. So. You do have Deep Cavern Bats in your list, because I know that for a fact, as I had that in That's my deck true. Last okay. night.
So we I was do thinking have spells new, only, so yeah.
Yeah, Miss Merrifine version. Wow. Yeah, it's definitely soft and can be answered, right? And that's, but I mean, do we need, I mean, there's, obviously I run a few interesting, unique ones on my list where I have like Frogkin Kidnapper, which was yep. one of the booster fun cards that they had with the fun frog with the bag that lets you ransom target card out of target player's hand. And so they can get it back, but they have to pay 3 more mana to get it back. And so suddenly White Plume Adventurer doesn't cost 3 mana, it costs 6. And so I've slowed you down and either made you sink multiple turns into getting your card back. Right. I mean, is hand heat maybe a potential, just having more of that in black, is that a speed bump that we need to potentially slow some of these stronger cards down?
Can't protect yourself from the top of the deck.
Right, this is true.
Well, that's true. Yeah, this is true.
Like at the end of the day, right, if they just rip it at the right time, or, you know, you thought season turn one, duress them turn one, inquisition them turn one, still chances are...
All right, Praetor's Grasp is going in my cube. That's it.
Just the beauty of magic, right? The top deck. Sorry.
So, no. So, Jesse, I know you're. I don't believe you play any mind. You don't play him or Mind Twist, correct?
I just moved off him. Mind Twist has been out for a long time. We talked about this a little bit in the first episode with my cube design methodology, in that I'm definitely trying to cater more towards like inviting beginners to the cube and introducing them to the format. And Mind Twist is a real Phil Bads card. Yeah. Obviously, it's insane. Like it, when it's in the cube, it jumps way up into one of my first picks, up there with Forth and Black Lotus and cards like that. But for that reason, it's out. The him I cut for lack of play. Hadn't seen that card played aside from me in ages, so I finally just took it out.
There is a card, Alex, do you have any comments on that as well? I apologize.
Nope, keep going. You guys are great.
So there has been a card that I've been seeing pop up in cubes quite a bit. Turok the Dread Canador. So one colorless, one black, comes into play. If you kick it for double black, it's a him. And grows whenever your opponent discards a card, and it's per white, right? So
yes.
At worst, a 2-mana 2/1. At best, a four mana 4/3 that has per white, and you just him them. Seems pretty solid. So if we were heading that direction, I would say absolutely yes.
Yeah, that card's been on my radar. I was thinking maybe like the reason people weren't playing him is that the games of Magic nowadays, partially due to what we've talked about a little bit here with how good the threats are becoming so board-based that him is in a very weird place where, like, as you said, you can't protect to the top of the deck, and I don't know what I'm going to hit. So if I just don't hit and you play a 1-drop and a 2-drop and a 3-drop while I'm hitting your hand, I die. Whereas it's him, you know, the Turok on a stick, gives me that body to interact with this very, very powerful board that so many cube decks are building.
Well, and not having the agency with him to Turok too, right, is another reason why cards like, you know, Thoughtseize, where you, even if you only get one card, that you get to specifically take the card, could potentially generate you so much more value than it being two random cards, right?
Just oh, absolutely.
That player agency is hard to overstate.
Him is an insane card, obviously. There's a reason I was still playing it. It's just an automatic 2-for-1 with the possibility of hitting lands, which, you know, most of the hand disruption can't do. If you turn to him and hit the 2 lands left in their hand, that game's usually over.
Yeah.
But in the same way, as I mentioned earlier, that's also pretty feel bad. So, like, the best him can ever be is depressing. And that's not where I want to be anyway. So between people not playing it and that aspect, I cut it, but at least the Turok is a 4-mana card, so it's much less likely that it ends the game on the spot. It's just an inherent 2-for-1 that grows and is also protection from the best removal in the game. So,
well, I'm actually running Turok in my list at the moment, and that is one thing that we have found is the fact that it is the 4-mana and being triple black with the 1 in its casting cost and then the 2 from the kicker is a pretty hefty price to pay, and it just comes down so late. That sometimes, yes, you're getting the best card out of their hand just because that's all that's left in their hand. Yeah. But a lot of times, it's like you said, the White Plume Adventurer has already come down on turn 3, or if the cube is powered, maybe turn 1 or 2. And Turok, you know, Dread Cantor is either coming down too late, or they just discard a card that is not White Plume Adventurer. And off to the races they go. So, you know, so I think, yeah, I do like that as a potential substitute card, but I definitely think it's a little bit slow compared to some of the other options that may be out there at 1 or 2 mana.
Yeah, I like the card overall. I do think it being pro-white is accidentally very relevant.
Right.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
But, because, yeah, I mean, at this point, white and black are kind of the kings of removal. And I feel like even more so lately, because it does feel like more and more cubes have moved red away from as many burn spells as they used to have.
I did see that. Incinerate, Fear, like freaking 3 different burn spells were cut from a couple of people's cubes, and I just add them back in.
Yeah, see, I'm on 1, 2, hold on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm at 8 burn spells on the 1 and 2 drop that are 7 instant speed, and then I also have Chain Lightning and Mizzium Mortars. So I've quite a few in my list. And I don't know why people are moving off this stuff, especially as good as the early threats are. Some really important things you need to clear off the board on turn 1 if they land, not to mention just the power of killing a dork if they are on green anything.
So being less cards than you, I'm on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 with Earthquake 9. Burn spells, and I just add Shrine of the Burning Rage back in. So being less cards than your cube, I have more burn spells. Because I think you're dead on. Killing freaking one drops is so important. Ravagan, yeah. Freaking any mana dork, Hex Drinker, right? They just need to die.
Yep. Or, you know, killing one of the moms before it's turned on.
Exactly, giver or mother. Yeah, rolling Earthquake has paid off in dividends many times.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, I also am Pyroclasm, and like there's other ways to kill, but I was specifically talking about like the targeted removal. Beyond the targeted removal, I have another Clasm, Brotherhood's End, and Delayed Blast Fireball, I think, are the other 3. Oh, I guess Banefire is targeted.
Ooh, yes. I haven't seen that card in forever.
That card being uncounterable makes me never want to cut it. I just don't.
Well, but you're not specifically running Channel in your list, right? Which is what a lot of people
have Channel.
Oh, you do? You've got Channel Fireball then with the Banefire. As oh, okay.
That is an old combo I haven't seen in years.
I mean, I don't like
Banefire. Go ahead.
Oh no, you're fine. I was gonna say I thought you had cut Channel because like you were saying you were trying to edge towards that new player kind of kindness, you know, just being kinder to new players, and so I didn't realize if Channel was still on your list or not.
Yeah, but I just have some of the things that are more degenerate to put out cleared off. And obviously you can like still channel Emrakul, which if you got it, cool. You know, that's almost one of those things that like first off it happens so quickly that it doesn't often leave feel bads because like the game's over and you shuffle up, you wasted 19 seconds. Doesn't feel quite as bad as like investing your time and getting demolished. And it's also cool, right? Like it's one of those like plays that you lose to, but it like, oh my God, they Emrakuled on turn 1 or 2. I want to play this cube so I can do that too, kind of thing. It has that cool element, especially with Emrakul. Everybody I know that's new to Magic is always like, oh my God, Emrakul. You know, they kind of have this, it's one of those creatures that has a little bit of awe around it.
Draw, Mystique, a 15-15 protection from everything.
Yeah, card's wild, right? It's definitely new player spaghetti.
Who doesn't want a flying spaghetti monster?
So I don't have Blightsteel Colossus in the cube. Channel Mind Twist obviously isn't in. You can definitely channel a Fatty out. I have Cityscape Leveler and some of the other Eldrazi. But I think, like I said, I think for the most part, they end the game, when they go off, they end the game hard enough that they don't feel so bad as they look cool. And I haven't heard any complaints about it yet. If it ever changes, you know, if I start hearing a bunch of new players sad to being annihilated on turn two or three, then maybe it comes out. But haven't had that experience yet.
Hey, I just ran added Banefire to my cart, so thank you.
There you go. I don't know. For me, I don't even play it as a combo piece. It's in there because it's one of the best reach cards in cube. I take that card anytime I'm in red, and it almost always makes my list. Because if I'm playing aggro, if I'm playing mid-range, like I'm chipping away or I'm going fast, either way, if I'm at six lands and I can't finish you and I draw Banefire, you die. You don't get to argue about it.
Sometimes. Friend and I made day two with a lava axe, just old-fashioned lava axe, so I get it.
Not being counterable. Yeah. Well, not being counterable is a very, very important aspect of that card. If it didn't say that, yeah, and damage can't be prevented either. Yeah, it's niche, but I play it in almost every red list. I draft it, so.
Well, just anyway, saying, I'm interested. Yeah, kind of going back to the top of the subject. I mean, obviously, there's three cards that we've been super hyper focusing on for power creep. Are there other cards in specific that you wanted to talk about when it came to power creep, or anything else that comes to mind? It's just stuff in recent releases that have made you kind of think about the subject or wanted to talk about the subject here tonight.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a new thing, and it's not like just this year either, because I mean, there's also cards that like completely blew up the format, and they are insane first picks in cube. Cards like Urza's Saga, actually fairly recently also, we have Comet, the Stellar Pup, our favorite little puppy dog, is outrageously powerful.
Interested to know if you were going to mention Comet, because again, another card that came out of either an unset or a set designed for multiplayer Magic, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, which that does, like, again, I completely agree with you, and I'm glad you noticed that from my crying. That card is wild.
May. The only thing about that, though, it's the first legal unset ever.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Right. This can be played in Legacy, which is obscene.
Right. Which I haven't actually checked. I don't think it has a splash yet.
No, I don't think anything. I believe there was a talk about one Unfinity card that made it. I added the Unfinity booster card for 6 mana, but that was far too powerful. I did not think that card was worth it. But I don't think Comet Stellar has made it into any Legacy or Vintage decks yet.
Yeah, the lines you play in Legacy are just so tight that the variance of not knowing what you're going to get is probably a little too punishing for a format with lines that tight. Because like you need to do an X thing for your 4 mana and it does something different, even if it is a good different. Just being the wrong good can kill you in that format. So,
well, I'm interested because you brought up Urza's Saga here a minute ago, which was a card that came out of Modern Horizons 2, along with things like the Evoke Elementals, which have also had a lot of talk over the last couple of years about, you know, obviously, you know, breaking Modern to the point that we've now banned Fury from Modern, right? And obviously those are very powerful cards. A lot of them are actually answers, you know, or are answers. I mean, you've got, you know, Solitude and Fury and even Endurance being able to take graveyards away in response to reanimation spells, which seems to never come up, right? Quite as often as you think it would, which always kind of surprises me. But, you know, these were some incredibly powerful answers that they printed in Modern Horizons 2, but even these things that feel like these super crazy powerful answers, like, still aren't answering things that we've been talking about today for super power creep cards, and they themselves were considered to be power creep cards like a year ago. So I mean, the cycle seems to be moving at a pretty fast rate, right? Or is there something else to it that I'm not seeing or I'm not thinking about that you guys are thinking about when it comes to potentially these cards?
I'm going to just change this real quick. Comet is definitely in Legacy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like incredibly there, but it is in the Boros Initiative deck.
Gotcha.
I thought it kind of was, but you guys follow that so much closer than I do that I wasn't going to argue.
I knew there was a Boros Initiative deck. I just didn't know they were on Comet. But yeah, I mean, that's one of those weird places where that deck probably has the freedom to quote unquote miss because of the ridiculous value initiative is building them.
They probably have Spirit Guards, Ancient Tombs, just trying to accelerate that as soon as possible.
Yeah. Which means a lot of turn two white plumes.
Yep.
Uncounterable, probably. Because so many of them are human. Right. Probably Cavern in those lists. Gotta love that. The Modern Horizons 2 Evoke creatures are... They want to be fair. They read like they're fair. Right? You lose the creature. You lose a card. You're down all this value, etc. And then you play with them. And for the most part, that's not how it feels. Especially in Fury's case, with the ridiculous power level of some of these X1s. If you kill two X1s and a two toughness creature with a Fury, you're so far ahead.
The best pyrokinesis you could have ever hoped for.
Yeah. Well, just imagine if these old playable spells that were already decent had 3/3 double striking bodies on them, or, the best hand removal spell ever printed had a 3/2 menace creature attached to it that didn't lose you life for some reason. Force of Will was, instead of being negate like Force Negation, it was Creatures and Planeswalkers, and it was a 3/3 flyer for some reason.
It's insanely better Venser. We've never seen a card that's in any comparable to that than Venser, Shaper, Servant, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, not specifically in a creature. No, I think obviously the closest parallel to Venser has always been Remand. But no, not with the body. I don't think. Off the top of my head, anyway. And then it's better than Venser, right? Because they have to draw the damn thing again. Or not, if they need a different answer. So it can just completely get rid of the thing.
Some exploit cards, but those require a creature in play and such. So such a devalue.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. They're very, very powerful. I don't know that they... Like you mentioned, they're powerful answers. I don't think they scale in power to the things we were just talking about, but I do still feel like they are a power jump from where we were prior to Modern Horizons 2. Modern Horizons 2 got a lot of flack for powerful cards. And I don't think those creatures are the only offender. I'm blanking actually on the other insane stuff from that set, but I remember hearing loads of complaints about how good the cards were.
Well, and that's going to be the interesting thing this summer when we finally get Modern Horizons 3, that, obviously we're talking about the wheel that keeps spinning on potential power creep, and here might come more cards that we may be discussing in future episodes, I'm sure, once things are spoiled and tested and we've got the ability to talk about them with Cube. Awesome. Yeah.
We talked a little bit about the power creep kind of... What do you want to say? Changing the environment that we're used to. Do you think in any way part of my complaint, or even what's kind of the sentiment about the gameplay changing to being more board based, as you mentioned earlier, the answers are no longer as good as the threats. Do you think there's any element of nostalgia tying into all this, where the boomer in us just kind of misses casting a Tarmogoyf and attacking for six? Is that...
Well, I think the best person to probably speak to that might be Ryan, because
calling him out, shots fired.
I know, right? Gramps. Well, he even said in his last episode. I mean, he's the boomer dinosaur magic player amongst us, right? So that's
freaking lootly the guy who started playing in freaking Judgment. Really,
there you go. See,
and my first competitive scene was Time Spiral. So I'm just going to be honest. If I'm the boomer, then what are all the old people talking about their ivory towers and their freaking libraries?
I mean,
are they just the dinosaurs?
They're just the golden generation, man. I mean, they're even back behind the boomers. I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't know, because I didn't join in that late behind you. But still, I'm just saying, Ryan, I mean, I think you probably have some more thoughts and feelings on that than I do. So
So the nostalgia part is hard, to speak honest and truth. And me and my friends and old PTQ grinders, and Alex and Jesse, you've met a couple of them that come over here occasionally. They talk about these cards, right, that we have so much memories with, so much times with, so many good interactions with, and so powerful back then. And then we look at newer cards and we're like, unfortunately, they have no chance in comparison. It kind of hurts because I'm getting outclassed, right? Like, oh, I see that I'm walking with a limp. I get it now. I'm getting older. I see I have gray hair. Am I going to have Social Security?
Great question.
All these great questions. But in short, it's both awesome because I always want more players to come play the game, and I love that they're having so many different products and all those things, but it's both hard to keep up with. It's also hard for me to let go of because I'm a boomer and I like my things. So I need newer players to usually discuss it in very open and mini discussions to get them to pry them out of my hands. Yeah. Right? Fact or Fiction is the perfect example. Right?
Don't do this to me. That's cards in my cube. Right. Okay, so I know I broached this topic. We're going to end this show here. That was a great talk. Please donate to an old shelter near you. Bring thermoglyphs.
You'll see Ryan will be in the retirement home, so...
I don't know if it's fact or fiction.
Right? So,
I hate it.
I don't know. The card, it's cool. It's very cool, but it's hard to keep up with the new cards. There's so many printings of the newer cards, and again, like we're talking about, the power creep to me just seems like it's increasing too quickly. But that could just be the boomer in me.
Right, so you're thinking it's just too fast a pace, but you don't think we've gotten to the point where Power 9's being shadowed yet?
Not even close, no.
Not close. Interesting. Well, that might be something we have to expound on later when we have more time.
Heck yeah!
As for now, my friends, my lovely compatriots, my co-hosts, do you have any more thoughts for the week before we say goodbye to our listeners?
I hope that everyone has a phenomenal rest of the week. We really appreciate you guys listening and giving us a shot. It's been an amazing pleasure doing this podcast and so much fun. Please look forward to more episodes incoming.
Definitely. Just to kind of also add on that, we've also just gotten a lot of love and support from the Keep community as a whole so far. There was a lot of people sharing some of the initial posts that we made that we just wanted to say thank you so much for, and people being very positive to us, being here, talking and communicating in the space. And, you know, the Cube community in general is known for being fairly kind and fairly welcoming, but just it has felt awesome to us even just the last couple of days with the first episode releasing, getting to see people interact with us a little bit and say that they're excited that we're here. So just thank you to the community for already jumping on board and being here with us. We hope to keep having further discussions and to keep interacting with you guys further.
Love
it. The best. Thank you so much.
I'm at least the third best one on this podcast. Absolutely. My friends, I think that's going to do it for us today. Thank you for joining us for this discussion. If you have any input, feedback, requests, suggestions for things, content, or topics you'd like to hear us talk about in future weeks, please reach out to us. You can email us at squaresthatcube@gmail.com. You can also find all of us on the PNW Cube Dress Facebook group. It's very active, and it's a great place to find all the events we host throughout the week at various local shops in the PDX area and Vancouver area. And with that, I think we're going to say goodbye. Listeners, keep your sevens, don't mulligan, and have a good week.
Happy Tuesday!
See you, everybody.